Hare Krishna. So today we are reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrit, Madhya Leela, chapter 6, verse 230, is that right? Or 231? What does it say up there? So 235 is up there. So we'll read from 231, I believe. Okay. Actually, I don't have the Bengali on here. One second. If anyone has the Bengali on their phones, that would be helpful. So we don't have a book here. I have the English translations. So this is verse 231. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, "I think that today all my desires have been fulfilled because I see that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya has acquired faith in the Mahaprasadam of Lord Jagannath." 232. "Indeed, today you have undoubtedly taken shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, and Krishna, without reservation, has become very merciful toward you. My dear Bhattacharya, today you have been released from material bondage in the bodily conception of life. You have cut to pieces the shackles of the illusory energy. Today your mind has become fit to take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna because, surpassing the Vedic regulative principles, you have eaten the remnants of food offered to the Lord." And then we come to today's verse, which is actually a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada. "When a person takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead without reservation, the unlimited merciful Lord bestows His causeless mercy upon him. Thus he can pass over the insurmountable ocean of nescience. Those whose intelligence is fixed in the bodily conception, who think, 'I am this body,' are fit food for dogs and jackals. The Supreme Lord never bestows His mercy upon such people." Hare Krishna. Purport. The Supreme Lord never bestows His benediction upon those fixed in the bodily conception. As Krishna clearly states in the Bhagavad Gita, 18:66, "Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami ma shuchaha." "Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear." The verse that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quoted, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.7.42, explains the meaning of Sri Krishna's statement. Krishna bestowed His causeless mercy upon Arjuna just to get him out of the bodily conception. This was done at the very beginning of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, 2.13, where Krishna says, "Dehi nosmin yata dehe komaram yovanam jara." In this body, there is an owner, and one should not consider the body to be the self. This is the first instruction to be assimilated by a devotee. If one is under the bodily conception, he is unable to realize his true identity and engage in the loving devotional service of the Lord. Unless one comes to the transcendental position, he cannot expect the causeless mercy of the Supreme Lord, nor can he cross over the vast ocean of material nescience. Lord Krishna confirms this in the Bhagavad Gita 7.14, "Mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite." Without surrendering unto the lotus feet of Krishna, one cannot expect release from the clutches of Maya, the illusory energy. According to Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.32, Mayavadi sannyasis who falsely think of themselves as liberated from the clutches of Maya are called vimuktamanina. Actually, they are not liberated, but they think that they have become liberated and have become Narayan himself. Although they have apparently realized that they are not the material body but spirit soul, they nonetheless neglect the duty of the spirit soul, which is to render service to the Supreme Soul, Therefore, their intelligence remains unsanctified. Unless one's intelligence is sanctified, one cannot apply it to understanding devotional service. Devotional service begins when the mind, intelligence and ego are completely purified. Mayavadi sannyasis do not purify their intelligence, mind and ego, and consequently, they cannot engage in the service of the Lord or expect causeless mercy of the Lord. Although they rise to a very high position by executing severe austerities and penances, they still hover in the material world without the benediction of the lotus feet of the Lord. Sometimes they rise to the Brahman effulgence, but because their minds are not completely purified, they must return to material existence. The karmis are fully under the bodily conception of life, and the jnanis, although theoretically understanding that they are not the body, also have no information about the lotus feet of the Lord, because they overly stress impersonalism. Consequently, both karmis and jnanis are unfit for receiving the mercy of the Lord and becoming devotees. Narottam Das Thakur therefore says, Karma kanda jnana kanda kevala vishera bhanda. Those who have taken to the process of karma kanda, fruitive activity, and jnana kanda, speculation on the science of transcendence, have simply eaten from poisoned pots. They are condemned to remain in material existence, life after life, until they take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavad Gita 7.19. Bahunam janmanam ante jnanavan mam prapadyate vasudevah sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabha. After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om jnanati mirandasya jnananjala shalakya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Om Vishnu Manaya Krishna Prishnaya Bhutale Srimati Radhana. Well, that's a packed purport from Srila Prabhupada, and a verse which is quite serious also. Those who are in the bodily conception and who think that I am this body are fit food for dogs and jackals. It's quite a serious statement. One would think, what is the crime? After all, this is how people in the entire world are being trained at the moment, to think that they are the body. And it's just the norm. It's not that someone's done anything particularly bad. But it just shows what a gulf of difference there is between propaganda in the world and actual, real, progressive information. These shastras give us knowledge and information which is of a special character and a special quality. And it has nothing to do with furthering our stay in this material world or making it more comfortable or making it more enjoyable or about giving us a sense of fulfillment or achievement within this world. Actually, for a devotee, they feel the maximum fulfillment, maximum achievement when they actually do something substantial for the Lord. And Krishna consciousness is so wonderful, actually, that if we serve Krishna and understand that He's Bhoktaram, Yajyatapasam, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, that He's the actual center point of all our activities, sacrifices, endeavors, then actually there is peace for everyone, peace and happiness for everyone. And so Prabhupada says that actually prosperity that Mother Nature offers, you know, jewels, cows, wonderful grasses, fruits, vegetables, nature, the weather. These are all supplied in abundance by Mother Nature when there is a great outpouring of devotion for Lord Krishna. It is not that Mother Nature only supplies, or rather than supplies, we are forced to keep extracting as much as possible from Mother Earth through various contraptions, digging, mining. These things all have their place. They're okay. But our mentality at the moment is that my prosperity depends upon an ever-increasing industrial expansion that is designed to procure as many ingredients as possible from Mother Earth. And therefore, that is the major power play in this world. How to achieve control over various commodities that exist. That is how the entire economic base works. Who has control over the different facilities, systems, resources, places, locations, infrastructure, is considered to be powerful. And therefore, this is a major occupation in most governments and people's minds. Well, if people actually took a slightly, stepped back for a moment, and actually considered that all of the items that are available were actually all there before we turned up as humans with our sophistication and technology. It's not that we created the oil. It's not that the diamonds in the mines were created by the scientists in the last 200 years. It's not that anything that we mine was created by any of us. It was all supplied by Krishna. And so, if Krishna and Mother Nature, as the immediate personality, can supply all these things, do we really think that she cannot supply even more if required? There is unlimited bounty available in the earth. But this is the trick that scripture teaches us. And in the first canto, Prabhupada explains this in more detail, that if we satisfy the Supreme Lord, by His mercy, Mother Nature is very pleased. And when she sees that her ingredients are being used correctly to perform yajna, to offer to the Lord, she supplies even more and even more, in abundance. And so that is a trick which people don't always know. They don't always receive. But it's important to try to keep this kind of perspective. Some of the items that were spoken about in this verse, in this purport especially, are centered around who the Lord supplies mercy to. And what's clear is that Krishna does not supply mercy to someone who tries to further their bodily existence. Now there's different stages, different grades of spiritual practice. And turning to Krishna, rendering some devotional service to Him, inquiring into spiritual matters, is a very, very good start for devotional service. You know, we engage in the scriptures, we hear classes, we take some prasadam, we engage with the process. Now that has to develop further and further. And that is a very good start, because that is our connection. That by hearing from Bhagavatam, by hearing from the devotees, we make advancement. Nashta praishva badreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. Everything inauspicious in the heart is destroyed. Pure loving service is established. This is how it happens. And by rendering service to the devotee, we develop an attachment, an attraction for hearing about Krishna. Now it does have to progress further. Because we also need to move off the karma and jnana stages, which are mentioned in this verse. Now in the karma and jnana stages, there is also an understanding or a desire to progress towards the Supreme Lord, in many cases. The karmis engage in fruitive activities. And fruitive activities involving sacrifice, sometimes to the Supreme Lord. Now that is always glorious. Whenever anything is done for the Supreme Lord, it has an effect which goes well beyond just the immediate desired effect. So they also advance in some special way internally. But because the focus still remains my enjoyment, and after all, the karmakandas, the karma yogis, they engage in fruitive activities, different processes by which they can increase their level of happiness or facility in the world. That is the karmakand process. And even if it may include Krishna or often the demigods as suppliers or as objects of worship, this little element is still also present. That ultimately it is there for my satisfaction. My satisfaction and the satisfaction of my extended self. Which means, you know, my family, relatives, griha, sutta, kshetra, apta, the extension. As Prabhupada makes this point very in a very special way. That he said there's sense gratification and there's distributed sense gratification. So the level of distribution is different according to the person. If you're a philanthropist working in society, your sense gratification means the sense gratification of all those others who you are attempting to help through your charitable endeavors. Charitable endeavors are very good. But the desire to further the bodily condition is not very good. If someone is suffering, if someone is struggling, clearly we help them. I think everyone does that without question. But to try to further and propagate that as the ultimate goal of our efforts is incomplete. Because the biggest help that we can supply to anyone in need, and we'll come to that, who is actually in need, is to actually teach them the techniques by which they can get out of eternal suffering. Suffering not just in this life, but suffering in the next life, and the life after that, and the life after that. This cycle of samsara, birth, old age, disease and death. Wherever you're located, heavenly planets, hellish planets, opulent countries, poor countries, despots running your government, or highly conducive, lovely leaders, whatever situation you have, you don't escape these four things, birth, old age, disease and death. And therefore the focus in any advancing society or civilization is to teach people the techniques to stop these four things. People simply don't know that. That is the whole problem. Ignorance is one of the strong layers that everyone meets. You know, sometimes you see fog. If you go to different places, if you travel abroad, sometimes you see fog coming in at very low levels, thick layers of it. You can't see anything when that rolls in. So similarly, in this world, we have such a heavy fog of ignorance that we just cannot see what is what. We cannot see reality for what it is. And we suffer. And then we move on to the next suffering. We treat the first suffering. Then the next suffering comes. Then we treat that. Then another one comes. And it never stops. Never stops all the way till old age and then to the end, to leaving this world. So no one can claim that materialistic endeavors aim to stop this. At best, they attempt to improve one's condition during this process. But because they don't have knowledge of what happens after this process, they cannot protect anyone from the consequences of what happens afterwards. So coming to a stage where we give up the desire for personal achievements, personal sense gratification in this world, which is separate from eternal Krishna, that is almost like the next step of our spiritual progress. First step is to just come to Krishna and just to hear something, just to understand, just to have some prasadam. Then the next stage is to actually make with some conviction, a determination that I don't want to simply propagate these cycles endlessly. I've done it enough times. After all of us have been engaged in this attempt for sense gratification since we were born. Right from the very beginning, our satisfaction was the mother's milk. Then after that, it progressed to more and more childish things and then something more. We've always been trying to satisfy the senses. And has that ever stopped the demands of the senses from wanting more satisfaction? It's such a simple experiment you can perform. You just observe everything you've done in your life, everything we've done in our life, and you see that we've been pursuing satisfying our senses, satisfying our intellectual curiosity at each step. If somehow we satisfy that, next week there's something else that needs satisfying. Does it ever stop? It never stops. It's not something that will ever stop. And we know that in the pursuit of sense gratification, we are in anxiety. Constant anxiety. That's the nature of it. And then as soon as we get the reward we desire, we're at peace. But then the mind comes along. And the mind gives us a new concept to aspire for. Then we pursue that. Again, undergoing distress. Then that's satisfied and the mind goes off again. So at some point we have to realize this cycle is never going to end. There's nothing to it. It will continue forever. And we have all the evidence in our lives. 20, 30, 40, 50, however old you are. You have all those years of evidence right there in front of you. So sometimes we stay on stage one of spiritual life and we may engage in all these different practices, karma yoga, jnana yoga. Jnana yoga is an interesting one. It's mentioned because one engages in speculative knowledge to try to understand the absolute truth, which is much more of a noble aim than most of the aims today. People experiment to try to understand the absolute truth. So it's definitely quite good. But the thing is, it's a poor goal and process compared to something else. If you have nothing else, that's quite good, to be endeavoring to try to uncover the absolute truth. But if you know that there is something else, the process of bhakti yoga, upasana kanda, then you can put aside these inferior processes of karma kanda and jnana kanda and instead focus on the bhakti mark. If you understand that everything is supplied by the Supreme Lord, He's the supplier of everything. Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishami ma shuchah. Any relief you desire by having the consequences of your sinful activities removed is all supplied by the Supreme Lord. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo. He supplies all of that. Any processes, if we surrender those processes at His lotus feet and simply say to Krishna, please Krishna, tell me what to do. This refers to the processes of dharma. You know that people undergo in the karma kand or jnana kand. If we say that to Krishna, I'm surrendering all my dharmas to You. All these main dharmas, sub dharmas, upadharmas, all these the spectrum of different principles that I've been following, and I surrender them to You, then Krishna gives you some mercy and He helps you understand. Etava neva loke smin pumsam dharma parasmrita bhakti yoga bhagavati tannama grahanadibi. That the process of devotional service, beginning with the holy name, is the prime method. It's the prime and most powerful method for one to achieve success in life. Pumsam dharma parasmrita. That all the different dharmas that are available can all be surrendered to the Lord and superseded by the process of devotional service beginning with chanting of the holy names. And that is so powerful. It allows one to transcend laborious years of speculating on the absolute truth. If we hear from the authority, Srila Prabhupada, the acharyas, about the absolute truth, and these are persons who have realized the absolute truth, have been directly empowered by Krishna, and who see Krishna all the time, we save ourselves a lot of trouble. A lot of trouble trying to uncover how this mechanism works, how this aspect of spiritual life works. We save ourselves all this speculation, which is the item of engagement for jnani yogis. They want knowledge. They want to speculate. And this conversation is about with a person who is a great speculator. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is a great Mayavadi sannyasi and a great speculator on the absolute truth. And the consequences of that speculation, fueled by Shankaracharya's teachings, have situated himself in thinking that the Lord has no form. That's it. The Lord has no form. That's the goal of your studies, the goal of your speculation. Impersonalism. Therefore, he's called a Mayavadi. Now, some can say sometimes he's actually a Brahmavadi, maybe not a full Mayavadi, but these are technicalities which are largely overlooked by Prabhupada when he uses the terms. He's clearly referred to as a Mayavadi. He's adopting an illusory understanding of Krishna, of God. That here is someone who is formless, impersonal. And to extricate him from that condition, Mahaprabhu undertook a great leela. And that leela started when he first came to Puri and went to the temple of Lord Jagannath. And as you've been hearing over the last few weeks, months, when Mahaprabhu entered that temple, he fainted. Out of great ecstasy, having seen Lord Jagannath, he fainted. And it caused quite a commotion, because Lord Chaitanya was a rather unusual, large individual as well. Beautiful. And he crashed to the ground, and it was a great shock and surprise for everyone, a great source of wonder. Then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he detected certain symptoms on his body, certain ecstatic symptoms. Even though he was a Mayavadi, he could understand that there is something advanced going on here. And very kindly, he took him to his house, let him rest there, and slowly brought him back, encouraged him, fed him nice prasadam from Jagannath, which was much appreciated by the Lord. And then they had a whole discussion on philosophy. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya desired to educate Lord Chaitanya into the real Siddhanta of the Mayavadi sannyasis. And so he taught him various things from the Vedas, Vedanta. And then they had a whole discussion where Mahaprabhu explained that your explanations are actually covering the real message and purport of the Vedas. And I appreciate what you're saying, but I can't find any taste there. And then he proceeded to explain the meanings of the Atmaram verse in 18 ways, etc. And although Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a great staunch sannyasi, a very learned scholar, very highly placed in society, he was a leader of many disciples, he was thoroughly defeated by Lord Chaitanya. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya realized that I'm dealing with the Supreme Lord. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya did many nice, uplifting things during this entire process, despite being a Mayavadi. He looked after Lord Chaitanya's devotees, his associates. He brought prasadam to the Lord. He desired to, he desired for him to learn Vedanta. He arranged residential quarters for him. He facilitated him very nicely. He rendered a lot of service to Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya reciprocated with this. And this set of verses that we read today just follows a wonderful incident, whereby straight after the following day, after Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya realized that Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Lord and he surrendered to him, Lord Chaitanya on that day displayed to him his different forms, as Vishnu, as Krishna. A very great benediction. And that's not common at all to be able to see the form of the Lord revealed to you like that. Well, after that day, the following morning, Lord Chaitanya desired to reciprocate with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's wonderful transformation. So he went early to the Jagannath temple and brought some of the offerings from the morning Mangal service there. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was still sleeping at that point. And he came to his house, gave him that Mahaprasadam, woke him up, gave him that Mahaprasadam. And immediately Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya arranged a little seat for Lord Chaitanya and he sat down next to him and immediately honored this prasadam. And Lord said to him, how come you're honoring this prasadam? And then this whole discussion takes place where Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya says that actually there is an injunction that Mahaprasadam should be honored immediately. Wherever it's from, whatever condition we are in, whether we are in an unclean condition, whether the prasadam is from a distant place and is therefore slightly stale, whatever it is the potency of the Lord and it should be honored immediately. Now previously, prior to his transformation, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya would have staunchly followed the regulative principles of getting up, bathing, chanting, mantras and whatever it is. Lord Chaitanya was so pleased to see this transformation that he has understood how important the items of the Lord are. When you understand that bhakti is supremely important and devotion to Krishna is supremely important, we also understand that any items from the Lord are supremely important. So devotees are always eager to receive the Mahaprasadam of the Lord. And so this is the Lord's wonderful program, that he arranges using things that we are naturally attracted to. He arranges a situation by which we can advance. And Mahaprasadam is a great trick in this regard. Because most people, when they come across the Mahaprasadam, they eat it very happily. But why do they eat it very happily? Mostly because it's tasty. Isn't it? We all like nice, tasty prasadam. It doesn't require any logic, any understanding, any great reasoning process, a process of jnana. It's just tasty. Very nice. Opulent items made for the Lord's pleasure. We eat it. That's good, but it's not the complete way to honor Mahaprasadam. So it's like a stage one acceptance of the process. The highest stage is to understand that Mahaprasadam is the mercy of the Lord. And therefore we always sing the song, Sharira avidya jal jodendriya tahikal jive fele vishaya sagare taramatte jivahati lobhamoy sudurmati take jata katina samsare krishna badadavai moy kari bare jiva jai swaprasad anna dilobai se anna amrita pao. Let me enjoy this nectar. Radha Krishna gunagao and chant the glories of Radha and Krishna. Premada koshi chaitanya nitai jaini mai jaini tai. So this verse that we chant before prasadam is supposed to give us a little different dimension to normally just tucking in there. It's meant to orientate our consciousness in a slightly different way. That what is here in front of us is not a tasty item. It's actually the mercy of the Lord. And accepting the Lord's prasadam in that spirit actually gives us the real benefit. It allows all the entanglement that we've created for ourselves to start to be dissolved. And it allows us to control the senses, of which the tongue is the most voracious and difficult to control. So Krishna's process is wonderful, because one can do the same activity at whichever stage of devotion they're at. That's why festivals are so nice. Everyone comes. They head for the samosa tent. They have a pizza or two. Hopefully this year we can experience some of that. Then there may be some more renounced individuals who turn up, who might still have the same items, but they'll have a different view on it. Then they may go off to the volunteer prasad area at midnight after the Lord has been welcomed. And they may relish some nice prasadam there. Same activity, eating prasadam, but just completely different experience from everyone involved. Then you could take the case of Raghunath Das Goswami in Jagannath Puri. He would eat only a little buttermilk at one point. He would eat some small items, then water. And he would refuse opulent prasadam. Because he said, this bewilders my mind. Now, opulent prasadam is what we're about, especially at Bhaktivedanta Manor. The Mahaprasadam available from Radha Gokulananda is definitely the best. At least in my opinion, best in the world. Wonderful. Wonderful prasadam. Same item, but one can honor it in completely different ways. So Prabhupada says there's one verse in the Bhagavatam, and Prabhupada explains in there that we should not continuously endeavor to increase the satisfaction of one's tongue unlimitedly. That's not the goal. We shouldn't continually be thinking, how can I increase the satisfaction that the tongue receives? Rather, the aim is to subdue the tongue's demands, because it's the most voracious. And actually, that desire causes a chain reaction in the rest of the body, which causes our senses to be bewildered. So this is why one of the main things that those endeavoring to control their senses do is that they control their eating. So initially, we of course control our eating by eating only Krishna Prasad. That's a big achievement. Then as we progress, we may start to think less of the satisfaction it brings to the tongue, and more about honoring it in the spirit that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya honored it. That this is the prasadam of the Lord. In his case, delivered directly by Lord Chaitanya. In our case, also delivered, ultimately by the Lord, but through the hands of the devotees, when they serve it to us. So it's very potent, very powerful. So we can actually get a good appreciation for Mahaprasadam if we think in a slightly different way. Fit, the body's supposed to be fit for dogs and jackals. If one is in the bodily conception and only thinking of eating and sleeping and improving one's comfort. Therefore it's said that shvavid vara hoshtra karai samstuta purusha pashu nayat karana patopeto jatu nama gadagrija. Men who are like hogs, dogs, camels and asses. Praise those men who never talk about the glories of Krishna. So if our nature is hogs, dogs, camels and asses, we offer great praise and great glorification of others who never talk about Krishna. That qualifies us to be in that category, hog, dog, camel, ass. It's our ultimate insult. You hog, dog, camel, ass. But that's the thing, that actually our behavior is no better than that. Hogs, dogs, camels and asses all engage in these four activities, eating, sleeping, mating and defending. And if our aim is just to do these, which basically means ignoring Krishna, then we are of the same category. So the recommendation for humans to make success of their life is to turn to Krishna in devotion. And the people who do that are the people who should be glorified. When one chants the names of the Lord, is considered extremely advanced. Yanna madheya shravananu kirtanat. Such a person is considered very advanced. He's undergone many pious activities in the past, in previous lifetimes, to come to the stage where he wants to chant the holy name. So that's the type of person that should be glorified. And to get to that is definitely rare. It means we have to transcend karma, we have to transcend jnana. We have to reach a stage of pure devotion to the Lord. And if we do that, then that's it. No more troubles. We might have anxiety in the service of the Lord, but definitely no miseries that come about from material aspirations. We will relish the anxieties placed on our path of serving the Lord because they allow so many other people to be benefited. The process of preaching, the process of encouraging people to come to Krishna is uplifting for the whole world. Jarede kotaraka hai Krishna upadesh. That's what we should do. Whoever you see, whoever you meet, tell them about Krishna. And so this is the wonderful pastime of Sarvabhauma's transformation. Tremendous transformation. If Sarvabhauma could be transformed, and he's a staunch Mayavadi opposed to the form of the Lord, then definitely many individuals can be transformed too. But let's now adopt some of the behavior, the refinement, the qualities, the mood of service that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya adopted. And then we will eventually get the mercy of the Lord. So, is this the time we normally stop? 8:30? Or I don't know what the time is. Yeah? So then I'll ask if anyone has any questions. Questions, comments? Okay. So he can bring you the mic.
I have a question
Just switch. I don't know what happens.
Now? Okay.
That's better.
Did he convince him, how did he make him realize that the Lord is Bhagavan? By showing his different forms, or did he make him realize before that?
Just before that, he made him realize. Now, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a great scholar, a great authority in the Vedas, and he was very, very knowledgeable. So Mahaprabhu himself explained how his explanations were not complete. And he gave his own explanations which were superior. So he convinced him. When a scholar is defeated by another scholar, they're quite happy with that situation. Because a person who is scholarly inclined is ultimately looking for the best understanding. So for Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, his conceptions, his understanding was based upon his learning, his very selective learning. And that was what Mahaprabhu pointed out, that you've read only certain bits and bobs here, and your understanding is not complete. You've ignored actually main scriptures. Gopinathacharya and others, his brother, his associates, tried to tell him that you're ignoring Srimad Bhagavatam, you're ignoring Mahabharata, which bring out the devotional aspect of Krishna consciousness. And you're focusing only on this dry speculative stuff. So Mahaprabhu basically said the same thing to him. But he proved, and specifically one of the examples was his explanation of the Atmaram verse. Atmaramas chumunayo nirgrantha api urukrame kurvanti ahaitukim bhaktim itta bhuta gunohari. That when one is Atmarama, one is self-satisfied. They don't have any other hankerings, lamentations, etc. And Mahaprabhu explained this initially in 18 different ways. Now for Sarvabhauma, who had already explained this verse, I think in 9 ways, I don't know what the number is, something like that, they had this sort of little debate. And he was basically defeated. So Mahaprabhu, through his extensive explanations, basically convinced him that his understanding was wrong. And of course there's the personal presence of the Lord as well. And that's actually one of the secrets that, you know, sometimes one can engage in philosophy and it doesn't go anywhere. Previously, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had all these discussions with Gopinathacharya and all these other devotees. And nothing had changed. But Mahaprabhu's presence and his presentation, obviously, was done with a certain potency. So philosophy sometimes entertains people. You know, people discuss philosophy. It gives them some intellectual satisfaction. It gives them a little sense of intrigue, a feel of some sort of progress. But it does not always lead to devotion. It will lead to devotion only if the Lord bestows that upon us. And so we have to understand that through the Bhakti Shastras, we can understand the glories of the Lord and understand the glories of devotional service and engage in the practices. But we actually need the Lord to give His mercy to us. So Mahaprabhu, in this whole episode, is praising Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya because Lord Jagannath has given him his mercy. Actually, he's done it himself. It's Lord Chaitanya, who is Jagannath himself, who has given Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya his special mercy. And the same qualification was described about Rupa Goswami. That all Rupa Goswami, all the other associates are great devotees of the Lord. But how is it that you understand the mood of Lord Chaitanya so much? It's because you have received direct empowerment from the Lord. That's in like another level of closeness to the Lord. We can follow bhakti process perfectly. But who is that person who has been especially empowered by the Lord? Who is that acharya, the founder acharya, who can do things that other acharyas didn't do to such an extent? Who can manifest something so exceptionally? That is all the unlimited mercy of the Lord. So yes, the bhakti process is very special, and this is why we have to keep understanding that that's the focus. Not our great study, not our great logic, our great philosophy. But whatever we have, we try and use it to support that.
Can you say that like Srila Prabhupada was also having the same impact in his devotees when he was preaching? Like, by his presence also like you know, awaken the consciousness of the devotee, yes, not only by the philosophy.
Yes, Bhavatvida Bhagavatas Tirtha Bhuta Swayam Vibho Tirthi Kurvanti Tirthani Swantasthena Gadabrata. Holy persons like you are places of pilgrimage. Because you carry the Supreme Lord within your heart, you turn all places into places of pilgrimage. So when you have a pure devotee wandering around, that place becomes like Vrindavan. And even if others may not detect it, things are happening in the atmosphere around that are creating such auspiciousness. And then of course there are many components to this, that by rendering service, Shyan Mahat Sevaya Vipra Punya Tirtha Nishevanat, that when those around him rendered service to him, they attracted something else as well. They attracted the desire to hear about Krishna. So the more one engages, all due to the presence of a pure person, it just takes off. It increases. Then one is introduced to the scriptures, one's transformation of the heart takes place, one worships the deity, one practices clean life, one undoes all the other nonsensical things they've been doing, and one just becomes completely different. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya composed 100 verses immediately in glorifying Krishna. Composed them so quickly, so expertly. It's part of his transformation. And prior to that, he would have composed verses denying the Lord's form. So the results of being touched by Lord Chaitanya are special. Thank you. Yes, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the wonderful class. I have a question about the power of prasadam you were mentioning. But then, on the other hand, we also see someone like Raghunath Das completely kind of refusing to take anything but remnants, and even then refusing to take that.
Refusing to take remnants?
Well, even when he was, first he was just given the Mahaprasad, and then, you know, when he was just taking whatever was, you know, thrown away. And how do we kind of reconcile that with kind of honoring any prasad that is there? Or
yes, these are different stages. We have to just be clear which stage we're on. If we try to adopt the behavior of an Uttama Adhikari, it could be slightly problematic. We're supposed to have a sort of a clear concept where we are and where we're going, but not to claim that we're on a platform higher than we're on. When one is situated in a greatly transcendental state of consciousness, and one understands that actually pleasing Mahaprabhu is actually the goal. Mahaprabhu was very pleased when he saw Raghunath Das's renunciation. Mahaprabhu was very pleased when Raghunath Das was renouncing all tasty items. Now that becomes a higher principle. That becomes a higher principle. To please the Lord ultimately is our goal. The bhakti process is about offering pleasure to the Lord. Sanatana Goswami could see that Lord Chaitanya was dissatisfied with this blanket. Lord Chaitanya wanted renunciation to be demonstrated by many persons he came into contact with. And some of those associates, he sort of expected it. He expected that. From others, Pundarik Vidyanidhi and others, they had more opulent lives. Ramachandra Khan and others, you know. Even Rupa Sanatana Goswami's before, they were vastly opulent. So what is allocated to each person is different. And with different feasts, you know, the Chiradhai Utsav, sponsored by Raghunath Das, I believe. Isn't it? He's part of that whole pastime in the beginning, just before he was about to, just before adopting fully the renounced path. Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda tried to ensure that all the devotees would eat as much as possible. In one description, Mahaprabhu fed the devotees 5 times what they could eat, filled them up to the top, or he himself ate 5 times the quantity. There's so many prasadam descriptions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So you do have this. You do have these multiple facets that Mahaprabhu wants all the devotees to be fully happy, fully enjoying Mahaprasadam. But he's also extremely pleased when there are some devotees who adopt a mood of great renunciation, where their focus on the Lord completely outweighs any activity connected to the body. And their honoring of prasadam is really just to honor. It's just to honor. That's also very pleasing to Mahaprabhu. In the later stages, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, they would offer, you know, obviously, you know, once they established the different temples in Vrindavan, his diet was to offer a bati, a little rolled ball of dough, into put it in some coals, bake that, and that was it. That was his diet. Nothing very extensive, but you can imagine that offered to the Lord and accepted by Him is the most succulent Mahaprasadam. So yes, it is an idea. It is, as we become less connected to the body, the desire for bodily items decreases. Eating, taste, that all decreases. But we shouldn't act as if we can do that right now. We should try to control ourselves. And there's many instructions where Prabhupada encourages us to control our eating. As this one verse, we shouldn't unlimitedly try to increase the satisfaction we provide. But for a person who is at a very low stage of Krishna consciousness, provide them all that satisfaction they can get through Mahaprasadam. That's the injunction. You see completely different prescriptions given. You should eat a lot, you should eat little. Mataji, and then we'll come to you after.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, thank you for the lovely Chaitanya Charitamrita today. It's lovely to hear again about Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. A question regarding about his Mayavadi philosophy. He did perform deity worship, no, Prabhuji. Mm. With Jagannath Swami, but then again he changed suddenly to everything. Obviously, I can understand, like, I mean, Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there, and he with his potency. My understanding, I just wanted you to explain, Prabhuji. Even though he was doing deity worship, all of us do deity worship, he was doing all the sevas of everything, all the processes what we are doing, he was doing. But still he was called a Mayavadi because... But we think that by praying to Lord, by doing the deity worship, we are doing all the processes which we do for the Bhagavan. So where are we doing right and where did he not do right?
Well, one thing is with Mayavadis, they adopt a pancha shikha. They adopt worship of five deities, actually. Ganeshji is one of them. There's five specific deities they worship, but their understanding is that these are tools to help me realize that I am ultimately Narayan. And therefore a greeting that they offer to others is Om Namo Narayana. You know, I offer my respects to the Narayan within you, or I offer my respects to you as Narayan. So they are worshipping the deity, but it's not the worship of a devotee who tries to please the Lord. They may offer worship to the deity even with the desire to please the Lord, but thinking that they are the Lord or they will become the Lord. So that was very distasteful to Mahaprabhu. One of the strongest philosophical... even in this section, he speaks about Buddhist philosophy, which is about denying the Lord's form, about removing ourselves from the regulation of the Vedas. And that was very displeasing as a concept to Mahaprabhu. And Shankaracharya also, he related to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. This is one of the things that convinced him that Lord Shiva was talking to Parvati. During that discussion, it was explained that Shankaracharya should appear and bewilder people. But Mahaprabhu didn't like the consequences of that bewilderment. It was done as a service, but it's lamentable when someone actually follows it. So in his discussion with Sarvabhauma, he also mentions that this philosophy that you're speaking is basically Buddhist philosophy. But you're pretending as if it's something really exalted. It's not... And therefore there was, as you rightly say, there was a great gulf, you know, between a practice which is meant with a certain understanding, But now he's carrying out the same practice, but with a completely different understanding. It's like misappropriation. So, yeah, Mahaprabhu had to correct that. But you can see, because of his general qualities, he was able to receive that correction. And when presented in the right way, he transformed, became an excellent devotee, one of Mahaprabhu's leading devotees. So every single person can be like that. Simply if they just get a chance to hear about Krishna, they can transform from whichever state they're in to being a topmost devotee of Krishna. So yes, we shouldn't confuse their practice to be the same as a devotee's practice. There's completely different things going on.
Thank you, Prabhu. Just one more question can I add? It's regarding the prasadam. Like, obviously, you want to cook prasadam for the Lord. So today I'm going to cook, laukika or whatever, tomorrow some gobika or something else. Mm. Is that called sense gratification or not?
Is that
called sense gratification? Because you want to cook for the Lord, but ultimately you're going to take the prasadam. So indirectly...
Yes, well, the question is, whose sense gratification?
Yeah.
To cook for sense gratification is okay, but it has to be
Lord.
The senses of the Lord. So if you're thinking, my Lord likes loki sabji, and you make that for him, then you think, oh, he might like a jalebi or two with that, I'll make that for him. That's good. It does become a grey area. When we are cooking, and ultimately you're cooking to feed your family or those around you, there's definitely an item in the mentality which is that I'm cooking to satisfy them. Especially when later you get the feedback very clearly. Especially children will express the feedback very clearly. So then your clarity of who am I offering this to definitely does get impacted. And that's why one thing is that we're supposed to offer service to the deity. So Prabhupada wanted congregation members to come to the temple as a priority where possible. He didn't want devotees to, in one place he said this, he didn't want devotees to just be sitting in their homes following their regulative processes, offerings, all of that independently. He wanted them to come and serve the central deity. And so that's very important, because when you're doing that, there should be zero consideration of this is to satisfy this devotee, or this person has come, it's to satisfy them. There should be absolutely no question that thought comes. Because this has to be the one place, Radha Gokulananda, or the installed deity specifically, where no other considerations are important. We're offering Krishna a selection of items which are for his pleasure. And we're feeding him nicely. And then we may honor some of that later. So we can also bear in mind a good quality I see in many of our congregation when they come, is that they only take a little bit. You know, they'll queue for right up to the showroom and double back sometimes to get a little Mahaprasadam. And they'll say, I only want a little bit. And that always inspires me. I'm there with my big plate, you know, stocking up. It's very inspirational, because it means that the person has some concept that this is not for feeding the belly. So when we are, especially if we, over time, you know, if we learn to cook for the deities, it will help with developing that mood that I'm cooking for the Lord. And so we should try to do that.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Yeah, I think Prabhuji, you had a question also.
Actually, mine is not a question. I am only exemplifying the point today stressed by you. Namely, even if we do not pray the God, speaking ill about the God, also it has got very dangerous and adverse effect, which has been shown in recent incidences. Mm-hmm. I have come across very robust people only. You must also have come across. So they made it a point to speak ill about the God. And before our own eyes only, it did happen that they have been taken away. They lost their lives also. Abusing, just abusing Hindu gods, particularly. And they paid the penalty before our own eyes, that one. So it is their good, that one. We should speak good, praise the God, offer ourselves completely, give ourselves in complete devotion, accept the prasad after giving him to the, after offering him the prasad, taking the prasad from him, as it is a blessing from him, has got very powerful effects. It strengthens us, glorification, strengthening us, and actually we will be obtaining the blessings of Almighty, that one. Whereas the opposite side, also God is proving by his own deeds in this era, before our own eyes, is proving that those who are speaking ill about me, they are going to get this adverse effect. Like that one. So it is an essential thing.
That is a very good point. You mentioned the consequences of the opposite.
Before our eyes, that one.
Shishupal is an example of that, no? Yes. Blaspheme the Lord continuously. from his very birth, before he could even speak properly, he was blaspheming the Lord. What an achievement.